when you're trying to lead a team, as you say, what you really want to be doing is inspiring all the people who work for you. And the best way, and really the most often overlooked way of inspiring people under you, is to show them why what they do matters, how their job, their specific tasks that you give them connect to the larger picture. I'll give you a perfect example. My wife works for a software company based in California, and one of their clients is one of the dollar stores, one of the dollar retail stores, where all the products are $1.99.
Yeah.
And at one of their
annual... Love those places.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're there all the time. So at one of their meetings a couple of years ago, the CEO of the client, the dollar store, stood up and said, I just want to let you know, before we get into the specifics of our roadmap for the product for this year, I just want to let you know that you, my wife's software company, have done your job. Last year, because you did your job well, we were able to do our job well, and that means we were able to open more stores to offer affordable products in the areas of the country that need them most. And from that moment on, it was light bulb on for everybody at my wife's company who was there, and they then communicated this back to everybody in the company. Now they had a mission. They're not just working on specific tasks for this client. They're bringing affordable products to people who need them. That's how you lead.
Yeah.
So in terms of management, when you gather your staff together for a meeting, show them repeatedly why what they do matters, how it connects to the bigger picture, and you will have an inspired and productive team working for you.
And it seems to me, and in fact, part of the title of your book is How to Become a Master Communicator, 59 Quick and Easy Tips That You Can Use Today to Become a Standout Writer, Speaker, Presenter, and Listener. And the part of that that I liked was this isn't just speaking. This is communication in all its myriad of forms.
Exactly. You know, I listened to an earlier show you did, I think recently, with an executive at Deloitte about the changing workplace culture.
Yeah.
And that was a great interview. You got into this really interesting side conversation about the communication tools, technology, and the ways that it's allowed people, in a positive way, to become more flexible in the way they work and to work more, you know, according to their own learning modalities and productivity. And it's allowed teleworking and more flexible hours and that sort of thing. But the one danger that all of these technologies have introduced is that there seems to be some sort of a formula where the easier we make it for you to communicate with me, the less seriously you're going to take that communication, the less formal you're going to be, the less professional you're going to be.
Hmm.
And so
all of a sudden we're texting with each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think you made the point in that interview that email has become sort of the old clunky technology. And the thing about an email is that if you're doing it from your computer, you're going to treat it more like a letter or a formal document, because it's easier than writing a letter, certainly. But it still requires you to structure the content and to think through a little bit, at least, how to present the information you're presenting to your recipient. But if you're texting, you don't have to capitalize letters. You don't have to use punctuation. And if you're instant messaging, goodness, you can be sending happy faces. Or if you're angry, you're sending an icon of a guy with a red face and fire coming out of his ears. So we've become increasingly, I would say, less professional, less serious about how we communicate. And it's very important to remember that when you're in a workplace setting, no matter what communication tool you're using, you're still communicating in a workplace context, and
yeah,
this is still your reputation on the line.
Well, and I think people sometimes forget that everything represents how you communicate. Whether it's an email or a text message or whatever it is, you need to treat it with certain level of, I guess, decorum's not the right word, but this is a way of communication.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I'm communicating with you, I'm representing my department, my agency, my organization, a company, if I'm in the private sector. I'm representing a lot, right? So, and what other mechanism do you have for judging my professionalism, my intelligence, my conscientiousness, any number of professional traits other than the way I communicate with you? That's it. That's all I have.
Yeah. So you've given us a couple of tips throughout here, one being when you're coming up to people and they look like they're busy, ask them if you're busy. Do you have a second? Can we just chat? I get a lot of PR calls, and people, the PR folks that I love are the folks who say, do you have a second to talk? Great idea. Well, give folks some other tips about how one can be a master communicator.
Well, in terms of writing, which is my area of focus, I would say the overarching rule, if you want to assign a single rule, would be think like your reader. There are 1,000 tactics, techniques that follow from that. But the most important thing is when you're writing a document, and that could be an email, it can be an instant message chat, it can be a formal report or a press release, whatever it is, try to envision the person on the other end and how that person is going to want to absorb the information. How do they want to receive it? I'm sure if you deal with PR folks every day, I'm sure you've gotten the emails that are just simply thought one, thought two, thought three, thought four, send. And you think, okay, so this was easy for the PR.
Or don't use subject lines. It drives me crazy when people, I get a lot of email. It helps if you use subject lines.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the tips I give, I believe in this book, but I've given it elsewhere, is change the subject if you're in a long email thread.
If it's no longer about the subject that it was originally about, change the subject line.
Exactly. Exactly. These are the little things that you can do that show respect for the person, that have a huge return for you, the communicator, because the effect over time is that people begin to respect you more. They think of you as a professional. And as I said, they welcome future communications from you. If I'm in the habit of sending out subject lineless emails and people see a blank email from me, and this is, let's say, the third or fourth in a string, at some point they're going to turn me off. They're just going to start ignoring me, or they're going to mark me unread and say, I'll deal with him later. And that's the last thing you want. That's professional suicide. Is to become a dreaded presence in the workplace.
And it goes back, in fact, we had almost a year and a half ago, we did our first Federal News Radio book club on this book that's all about trust and how important trust is in an organization. If that breaks down, all of a sudden it's almost impossible. It really becomes, in the classic sense of the word, the dysfunctional workplace.
Exactly. Exactly. No one wants to deal with anyone else. Everyone's got their heads down, and you have no productivity. And of course, when you're not communicating with your coworkers, with your supervisors, with counterparts in other agencies that you need to help with your own work, you're not collaborating. You're not creating anything. Work grinds to a halt in that sense. And so, in terms of thinking like the person you're communicating to, it's very important that you consider how busy that person is. If you can cut ruthlessly in your communications, get rid of everything that's not absolutely necessary for that person to absorb your message or to do what you need them to do. If you can use smaller words, I mean, there's so many ways to do this. They're very small. They take little time on your part, and they have huge payoffs. Use smaller words. Don't write. Even in a formal document, don't write ascertain. And you just want to say find out, right? Because what's happening is if I'm communicating with you...
Or acronyms. People use acronyms. Sometimes they're another PR company. I tend to deal with a lot with PR folks. But they always put bullet items just almost to bullet the top. This is what we're talking about. Here's what we hope we can do. And then they explain down below. It's sort of almost like the lead of a news story. It gives you an idea of what it's about, and I can quickly make a determination. Do I need to take action, or can I say thanks is not really what we do?
Exactly. Now, that's the way to communicate. What they've done is they've done the work. That's another tip that I offer as often as I can. Do the work up front. The more work you do as the communicator, the less work you're creating for your recipient, and the better return you're going to get. So someone who's stuffed all the information at the top of an email to you is going to turn you off. You're going to look at that email. I mean, even aesthetically, if it's a big blocky paragraph, if it's all one paragraph, it's more than a screen, you're going to say, I don't want to deal with this right now. Whereas if someone takes the time to think through, well, what is the least amount of communication I can offer at the very top to whet this person's appetite for more information? And then I'll structure it such that if he's interested, I give him a second layer below. And if he's really interested, I'll give him the full content at the bottom and he can dig in. But if I've piqued his interest at the very top, why do I want him to go through all of this material? Why don't I just have him call me? So if you've structured it properly, you've taken all the work away from the recipient, and that's going to come back to you in the form of a better response from your recipients of your communications.